In answer to the question, what is enlightenment, the German philosopher Immanuel Kant said it was man's emergence from his self-imposed nonage. Nonage isn't a word we use much these days. It means immaturity, childishness, being dependent on others. According to Kant, nonage is an inability to use one's own understanding without another's guidance. And enlightenment, he said, is about emerging from that sad, cushioned, childlike state and having the courage to use your own understanding. That, in a nutshell, is enlightenment. We hear a lot of talk these days about there having been many enlightenments in the 16 and 1700s, and it's true there were. There was a Scottish Enlightenment featuring Adam Smith and lots of talk of morality and economics. A French Enlightenment featuring a lot of blood and cries for liberty and equality. A Dutch Enlightenment featuring arguments for freedom of speech that still sound radical today. In the 1670s, the Dutch philosopher Baruch Spinoza said, "The liberty of saying what he thinks must be conceded to every man." Many modern-day politicians should heed that dust-gathering 350-year-old demand. But boiled down to their essence, these many enlightenments, all enlightenment, was about mankind growing up, stepping out of his self-imposed immaturity into the scary but far more interesting world of autonomous adulthood. As Kant said, the motto of the Enlightenment was dare to know. It was about encouraging individuals to use their reason in all matters. Well, if that is enlightenment, we can be pretty certain we now live in unenlightened times. For today, far from being encouraged to grow up and strike out, we're being sent back to nonage, back to that nursery of pre-enlightenment existence, where men and women were presumed to be juvenile, thoughtless creatures in need of constant guidance. Reading Kant's essay on enlightenment today, more than 200 years after it was first published in 1784, it's remarkable how much his era sounds like the nannying, nagging, nudging states many of us live under today. Kant bemoaned the fact that the educated echelons of society had set themselves up as guardians of mankind. He wrote, "I have a book that thinks for me, a pastor who acts as my conscience, a physician who prescribes my diet." These guardians treat people as domestic cattle, he said. They carefully prevent the docile creatures from taking a single step without the strings to which they have fastened them. These interferers have convinced the overwhelming majority of mankind that it should consider the step to maturity not only as hard, but as extremely dangerous, Kant angrily complained. Doesn't this sound spookily familiar? He could have been writing about 21st century Australia, or Britain, or America. Because today, once again, we are surrounded by armies of guardians, telling us that to go it alone, to leap headfirst into life without the support of lifestyle gurus and experts, is not only hard, but extremely dangerous. It might not be pointy-hatted men of God who now hector us, but we do still have books that think for us on everything from what to eat to how to raise our kids. We have legions of therapists who emote for us, telling us which emotions are good, self-revelation, self-esteem, and which ones are bad, anger, passion, stoicism. And like poor Kant, we have physicians who prescribe our diets. You can't swing a supersized bar of chocolate these days without hitting 10 experts itching to tell us how much fruit and veg we should eat if we don't want to die early and fat. Kant didn't like having pastors acting as his conscience. Well, today we have nudgers who aspire to be our surrogate willpower. The nudge unit in Downing Street actually uses that phrase, surrogate willpower, to describe its desire to make lifestyle choices on the little people's behalf and then nudge us towards them. If anything, today's guardians are worse than the moralistic busybodies who infuriated Kant. For now, standing on one's own two feet isn't only discouraged, it's pathologized. If you refuse to kowtow to therapists' diktats, you're in denial. If you get angry, you're told you have intermittent explosive disorder. If you say screw you to the diet prescribers and continue to scoff butter and wine, you'll be told you have a food disorder. Today's guardians have rebranded moral autonomy as a mental illness, convincing their cattle that life on your own isn't just hard, it could kill you. The rise of new, even more patronising guardians explains why our societies are so anti-freedom. When people aren't trusted to run their own lives, to think and feel and exist without guidance, it's inevitable that more rules will emerge to nag us into doing and thinking what our guardians think we should be doing and thinking. Whether it's hate speech laws, bans on smoking in public, or petty rules about when adults may engage with children, loads of new laws now govern the minutiae of our lives. Kant said there was only one sure way to become enlightened, by being free. He wrote, "The enlightenment requires nothing but freedom." He said that it's only through being free that the human spirit can expand to the limit of its capacity. All the great thinkers of the Enlightenment agreed on the importance of freedom. From John Locke to John Stuart Mill, they all said that to become enlightened, we needed to be free. Free to think and to speak as we see fit, and to determine our destinies for ourselves. That's because they trusted in humankind. Unlike the pastors of their time or the nudgers of ours, they believed individuals were capable of governing their own lives. We need to recover that trust in people and that thirst for freedom. Rebel against the guardians, say no to nudging and lifestyle policing, and let's finally do what Kant suggested we should nearly 250 years ago. Walk firmly and cultivate your own mind. I'm Brendan O'Neill, filling in for Amanda Vanstone. This is Counterpoint on ABCRN, and after the break we have two heavyweight philosophers discussing how we might hold back the tide of anti-enlightened thinking.